So we welcome our first guest of the show here, an interview I'm really excited about. We got PHS English teacher Matthew Carecci. Am I saying your last name right?
You are. It rhymes with spaghetti.
Spaghetti.
You remember.
Okay. So you're teaching English over Pacific Horizons, right?
I am, yes.
Okay. And you have a bicycle.
I do. That's my main mode of transportation here. It's been so for 5 years.
Now, how do you get... So where do you live?
You're by Maliumai? Down near Maliumai in Whanganono.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Where?
Whanganono. Okay. It's a good place to live because it makes me really practice that.
Mm. Yeah, man, that's a trip there. So how is the commute in though? Like, do you get chased by dogs or anything like that?
Every day, yeah. It's made cycling here. When I do my training rides on the weekend, it's. I think the drivers have gotten used to me now, and I have a light, you know, a flashing light and a big orange helmet.
I've seen you now. Now I know where I've seen you. You wave. You always thank them for, like, not running you over.
Exactly.
You're a very courteous bicyclist.
Yeah, I'm happy for that here. It's taken a while to set in, but they're always the dogs.
Yeah.
The occasional unexpected pothole, you know, things like that. So you have to pay attention when you're cycling here.
And you, have you ever gotten bitten by one or anything?
One time. Yeah, one time. I've crashed twice because a pack of dogs, usually when I was descending a hill, ran out in front of me and couldn't brake in time and just went up over the handlebars because the dog got sort of under the front wheel.
Oh, geez.
That was early on. So now when I see a pack, immediate braking.
What do you do? Do you just get up? I found if you're walking, they don't trip out as bad.
Yeah, they usually run away because they think I'm going to scoop a stone and toss.
But if you're in motion, like if you're running, I'm a runner. So my thing, I stop jogging and I just like walk and stand there and then they just chill out.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you're running or biking, go ahead.
No, I was going to say I brought a trainer, an indoor trainer from home. So most weekdays I just train indoor. And then on the weekends I go out for the longer ride. So I minimize the exposure to the dogs, but it's sprint training. It's interval training. When I see dogs now, I just kind of speed up unless it's a big pack, then I'll stop and they'll go on their way and I'll go on mine.
Good deal. So you going over to teach at Pacific Horizons then you're a teacher there?
Yes, that's right. Yeah. I've been teaching there for 6 years. The first year the island was locked down because of COVID. So I taught online from Pennsylvania.
Okay.
Which is interesting. I started my classes, I think around 1 p.m. and went into the evening because of the time difference.
Sure.
But it was great because the kids were on campus in the classrooms with a proctor. You know, they weren't at home. And then I came through the REPAT program the following summer, so it would have been July of 21.
And so you were like quarantining in our hotel or whatever for?
I was in Honolulu for 2 weeks, which was kind of torture because I had a nice balcony and I could see Waikiki Beach, but obviously I couldn't go there. I was just on the balcony. And then I was at Fatuainga for 1 week after I arrived, so 3 weeks of quarantine.
Okay. Wow. And you teach English at PHS, though, right?
I do.
I've talked to a couple of parents. They say they give you really good reviews, man. They love you. Kids love you.
I love this school. The class size, a small class size, goes a long way. I taught at a private school in Pennsylvania, Mercersburg Academy, for 13 years. And there the average class size was around 12. And we're probably somewhere around 15, 16. So that really helps, particularly when you're teaching writing.
How are you teaching writing now? Like, I got to think every ChatGPT, even the teachers are using it. They're coming up with lessons plans off ChatGPT. I'm sure your students are doing it. Like, how do you ChatGPT your class so you're actually teaching and making them write instead of having the ChatGPT write for them?
Yeah, it's been a pretty steep learning curve because the technology has evolved so quickly. So several layers, you know, when I started, it was honor pledge. You know, you put the honor pledge at the end of your essay that I haven't used or I haven't plagiarized. I haven't used AI, I haven't plagiarized. And then if there was any suspicion, I have a scanner, a paid scanner, which is pretty accurate. I mean, they're, I think, the best on the market.
But what's that do? You feed the essay through there and you say, hey,
and it gives
AI, tell me if AI was used in
exactly.
This.
Yeah, it's amazing, right?
Okay.
AI to counter AI. And the best they can do is give you a likelihood.
Uh-huh.
And you can get false positives. So I told the kids, if it's 50% likelihood or less, I'll accept it. I'll say, yeah, maybe you used AI a little bit to clean up your writing, but the ideas are your own. But if it's higher than that, then we're going to have a conversation and probably a rewrite. But since then, I've just gone old school and we just do timed writing in class. Not always timed writing. Sometimes I'll give them class. I just collect it at the end of a class period and the next day they continue. But that kind of disrupts the writing. So there's no easy fix for what's happening right now.
Where are we going to be in like 10 or 15 years? Are we just going to like, because I don't think people are reading either.
Well, that's been another big push. I developed an elective for middle school students. It's called Dedicated to Reading. And it's just we have a small library, or they can go, to Folletti Barstow, or from home, choose their own books. And then they have to do a presentation about the book. It's just, I allow them time in class to read too, because I know the distractions now are too many. You know, when I was a young man, that wasn't the case. I had two options: go outside and play with my friends, or read a book. Uh-huh. But that's not the case anymore.
Yeah, you're challenged by like, okay, I can read it on my Kindle on my phone, but then I can scroll out of there and check my notifications and get my dopamine hits by watching 80 TikTok videos in a minute.
And you know how we talked about the climate before we came on air a little bit here. It's not conducive to having hard copies of books, but as much as possible, where I could get class copies at a reasonable price, I've done that just to minimize screen time. But sometimes it has to be PDF.
What books are you having them read? Just like The Great Gatsby, Kill a Mockingbird?
Those are the classics. We do some of that. So for 11th and 12th grade, we alternate every year English, British literature and American literature. So in American literature, we just finished up some of the classic poets like Walt Whitman and Emily Dickinson, and then some more modern poets like Joy Harjo and Jack Gilbert. And now they're reading short stories by Sherman Alexie, who's a Native American author. So I try to mix.
Is that a contemporary or is he like a classic?
Yeah, he's contemporary.
Okay.
Yeah. And his stories, we've been discussing them. He's a master of metaphor, of mixing together, it's based on his own experience growing up on a reservation, but sometimes they're laugh out loud funny. So he finds a way to balance the tragic and make us laugh at the same time, and using metaphor as well as literal plot events to really make the reader think about that experience and what it means to grow up on a reservation and the inherent challenges in that.
What about British? Are you doing the classics for that? Or
we do some. So as you probably know, Robert Louis Stevenson died in independent Samoa.
Yeah.
And he wrote a lot about the South Pacific. So we read that British author, Scottish, but we read his writing. And
it'd be Treasure Island, right?
We don't read Treasure Island. We read his short stories that are actually set
in the Pacific.
In Samoa.
Okay,
in,
fair
in
enough.
South Pacific.
Wait, Treasure Island's not?
I think it's based on his experiences here.
Okay.
But I think for 11th and 12th graders, the grade level isn't challenging enough. His short stories are a little bit more
Treasure Island's literary. More like elementary?
Or middle school.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe upper elementary, lower middle school. But we read stories also by Somerset Maugham, who also traveled and wrote a great story, if anyone's not read it, titled Rain, about Pongo Pongo.
Yeah.
Which is a great story. Actually, we did a field trip and we went into Pongo and looked at some of the places he was describing.
When was Rain written? Like, that was last century, right?
1930s.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's...
I'm telling you, man, I am so sick of AI that I myself have gone back to the classics, like the stuff that I thought was so boring in high school, because it's like a person actually wrote it. It's not, AI slop.
Yeah, and there was recently the big controversy. I think he was a writer for New York Times, published a novel, and then they discovered, I'm probably getting some of these.
No, dude, I remember that. He stole it.
He used AI to write large portions of the novel. So
even here, locally. Like, we get a lot of press releases from ASG. So impossible to find one that's not written by AI.
Yeah.
It's It's like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
Where are we going with this? Yeah.
And of course, in the classroom, you also have to talk about it. Like, what are the allowable uses? If you're going to send somebody a formal email using AI for that, okay, maybe, right? But if you're writing, like the seniors, I help them when they write their college application essays. And then the cover letters that maybe go with a scholarship or something. I'm like, that has to be your writing because that's your voice. That's what they want to hear. They don't want to hear AI's version of you.
Right. But
we're still working it out. The universities also don't know. They're still trying to work through it. And we, as high school teachers, usually take our cues from the university, and those cues have been mixed at best.
This is what I think is going to happen eventually, man. I think somebody's going to do something really bad with it. And then after that point, every time you use AI, there's like some federal mandate that's like, AI was used for this, you know?
Yeah.
Like they're gonna trick like us into some nuclear conflict or something and be like, well, Kim Jong-un got on TV and it wasn't Kim Jong-un, it was some deep fake, you know, something of that magnitude.
Deep fake videos are really, really worrying in that sense.
They're so good, dude. They're so convincing. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
But anyhow, we snag our way to that because I had to ask you, you got this book that's out, which is actually the focus of our interview. And I was like, hey, man, did you use AI to write this? And no, you didn't. And you were telling me all these things that you make your kids actually handwrite essays.
Now,
awesome.
Yeah, that's how.
In cursive too, right?
And I've had to relearn, not writing cursive, but reading cursive. I had to refamiliarize with myself with that. We get a lot of our kids will come in from SPICC. And there I think from what the students have told me, they really emphasize using cursive.
Awesome.
For those kids, I've had to relearn it, which is great. It's been fun.
That's great. I love hearing that we're still, I mean, just we're even moving away from handwriting altogether. So
The keyboard is everything now, but for writing, whether it's creative writing or analytical writing, I think, and the research bears this out, writing by hand at first, when you're drafting, when you're brainstorming, is much more effective than keyboarding. But the fact of the matter is that most of the kids are very comfortable with a screen. So trying to break some of habits, but introduce other options.
Yeah.
You know?
I feel like we might be headed that way. Like the fatigue just grows so big that, you know, there's a whole niche that's born of like, you know, non-AI art.
Right. And you know, with this collection of poems, half of them were published in journals before I collected them into this book. And all of those journals you have to send in with your submission. When you submit, it's usually maybe three poems, a statement that you haven't used AI, right? Now, I don't know to what lengths they go in actually following up, but you have to make that statement. And I would imagine if you're somehow caught up in a scandal whereby you've used AI, you'll no longer publish with that journal. They make that pretty clear.
Good. Yeah. Keep us on.
I think that's happening more and more in the publishing world now.
So speaking of which, you have a book. It's called Slow Boat to Samoa, and this is a kind of a compilation of poems. Is that right?
Yeah, they're prose, sometimes referred to as prose poems. So the form is technically called haibun, which combines haiku, which most people are familiar with, though, and we can get into that if you want, in an early version of the translations coming out of Japan, and then prose. But the prose tends to be much more poetic, so sometimes we call them prose stanzas. So it's a combination of those. And the prose tends to tell a story, and then the haiku, the way I say to think about it, because they're very sensory, there's a lot of imagery, is to think of them as reading a short story maybe, or a novel that has images, that has sketches or photographs. And those are like the photographs that sort of punctuate the prose and try to add a new dimension that maybe the prose doesn't have, or take the reader's thoughts in a different direction. That, you know, the authors in this form usually call it link and shift.
And this is about how many? It looks like you've got
there are 80 pieces in there.
80, yeah. 80 different. And so this is just kind of over the 6 years that you spent here in the South Pacific, your different experiences and things that you've seen?
Yes, yeah. Both here as well as farther afield in the South Pacific. I was as soon as things opened up after COVID, I was like, okay, I need to travel a bit. And I did some island hopping. So I was in Independent Samoa, and then I was in Tonga and Fiji, Vanuatu, Solomon Islands, PNG. And
man,
there are pieces from all of those.
You've been more places than most people who have lived here their whole lives.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And then in the following summer, I took my bicycle, coming back to that where we started, on the ferry to Independent Samoa, and I rounded both Upolu and Savai'i.
How are their dogs compared to our dogs?
They're completely different,
yeah.
I have to say. And I think because maybe because their embassy's there and they have triathlons there, the drivers as well are just much more aware or used to
a little friendlier cyclists. To a bicyclist, okay.
Yeah, they're just used to it. They know how to kind of how to deal it. When I first came here, it was, you know, people just weren't used to seeing some crazy Palangi riding around on his bicycle. But the dogs, they seemed to come to the property line, and that was that.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't come out on the road.
Okay.
I was not chased.
As
maybe
emboldened
one
as our
time
dogs.
In 2 weeks. Yeah.
Okay.
It was really beautiful. And Savai'i is, you know, just open and lush and very few cars, and was really just a ride through paradise. I loved my ride over there.
Awesome.
Well. Yeah.
So, again, if you're just joining us, this is Matthew Coretti. He is the English teacher over at Pacific Horizons. Been here in American Samoa teaching for 6 years and has put together a compilation of prose, poems, haikus, haibums about his trip or his life in American Samoa. It's called Slow Boat to Samoa. So I got your book here. Do you have anything that you can, maybe a starter piece that we can read for our audience before this goes on sale or available to check out at the library?
Sure. The library already has a copy of this as well as two of my... this is my fourth book. They have the three others that are available in print. The very first book I wrote, we lost my father about 16 years ago to cancer, and it was really my coping mechanism after he passed. It was very cathartic to write about the process of being with him during our summer break from school and taking him to chemo and that sort of thing. And that won an award and was published as an ebook. It's called Harvesting Stones. It's available for free download from Snapshot Press. But this is my third book, and the library has all of them. And as you noted, on the 25th, when we do the reading, copies of Slow Boat will be on sale there.
Cool. Yeah. So do you have anything you want to... open us up with?
Sure. So Deepwater Port, if you're, you know, you
what
have
page
a copy
are you
well,
on?
20, on page 20.
Check us out. We're going to, haven't done this in a while. It's like being back at English school.
Yeah.
So open my text to page what,
20,
Professor?
21, yes.
20 to 21. All right. Deepwater Port. I'm there with you. Okay.
And this piece won the Touchstone Award, which is given annually to the best individual piece of writing in this style in haibun. They also give for individual haiku. And it's about pango pango. And what I want the listeners to know is that when I write these pieces, it's a blending of lived experience as well as imagination. So not everything you're going to hear is gospel truth, but there's some truthiness to it.
Kind of historical fiction, yeah?
Yeah,
okay.
Something like that. So this is titled Deepwater Port. And it begins with a haiku. Barbed wire fence. Winter stars hung out for the night. A ripple of harbor lights becomes some recurring dream. Moving aft and fore on this floating world, I seek to unfind my sea legs. Enter the pub. Longshoremen, long off duty, unloading still. With another dark and stormy, the barkeep serves up an attitude, especially for the one who keeps on about the waterspout and how all the fish just landed in his boat. She turns to seamen, mansplaining the supermoon, shrugs, asks if I'd like one for the road. Night fog, the jaw sticks refuse my fire. The morning comes too soon. I look again, no ship on the horizon. A frigate bird edges instead a slow scissoring of the sky. I wade into the shallows, allow salt and sea to scrub me clean. Sun dry on the shore, washed up beside me like a drowned rat, blown out of the palms during last night's storm or a stowaway escaped from one of the ships at anchor. I bury it in the sand, climb the hill above the port. A stevedore sets down in the sprawling dockside maze the last container from a freighter already smoking at its stacks. Off-island news, a crease of sailors along the fence. Back down the path to the spot where sea poison trees drop intricate blossoms into brackish waters. The fire coral below hasn't bleached itself. I worry the change. Above these coral skeletons, I will a rainbow to bend back to the rising sea, to offer up some sort of treasure. Evermore, the link and shift of Delosi counter the erosion along the coastal road. In the distance, a boy skips atop the seawall, higher and higher, sea monsters edging ever closer, licking at his heels. Morning moon, among the whitecaps, a shark's fin.
Cool. And so this would be, this is an experience, deepwater port, Pongo Pongo, got the deep port, so I'm assuming that's here in America,
yes,
somewhere, right?
That's right.
All right, very cool. And so you've got a number of, you got 80, around 80 essays, I guess.
Poems, or okay. Haibun, to be, you know, it's because it's a combination form, but yeah.
All right.
Generally referred to as poems.
Very cool. And this is, will you be doing online e-publishing for this too, or is this going to be just hardcover
this, right now? No, there will be no e-version, at least at this moment, available, but Red Moon Press in Virginia is the publisher, and they will have copies available online to be ordered.
How'd you find them, or did they find you?
They are the sort of the premier publisher for this type of form. So
okay.
As I was coming up maybe about 20 years ago and learning the form, the earliest books that I purchased were just Red Moon Press. And so then naturally the aspiration became like, one day I want to publish with Red Moon Press. And
okay.
So all three of my hardcover books or my hard copy books have been published with them.
Congratulations. Most of these guys, you know, I've interviewed a number of local authors, and most of them have to self-publish. So
mm-hmm.
to get actually, you know, find a publisher, that's a big deal.
Yeah, it's hard work. And a shout out to Jim Cation. It's sort of a one-man operation. He does everything. And he was one of the earliest voices in haiku and haibun. And he has been a great mentor to me as I brought these collections together.
So are you going to hang out here for a while in American Samoa, or do you plan on moving back to the States, or do you have any plans?
Yeah, it's kind of a painful question because I'll be leaving in June. I'm close to retirement. I've been teaching for 28 years now, and I'm going to retire, I think, probably at 30 years. And I used to be a principal of a school. It was an orphanage in Malawi in Southern Africa. And then I became the director of the same organization, had another orphanage in Lesotho. And I was in the Peace Corps in South Africa, and I learned to speak Sesotho. So that was a really good match. But now they've been back in touch, and they like me to teach English. I said the administration stuff was great, but now I just like to focus on teaching English at their center in Madagascar. So it looks like in late August, I'll probably be off to Madagascar.
Nice.
For my final 2 years of teaching. And probably.
And you came here from Malaysia.
I came here from Malaysia. That's right. Yeah.
Is that Kuala Lumpur?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I was in Johor Bahru, which is sort of the southernmost on the peninsula, major city. And in fact, I was living in an apartment on the 14th floor of a high rise, and I could see the lights of Singapore at night. So we were.
Could you see that tower that they have? They have that those twin towers.
It was pretty
there?
Indistinct,
okay.
Because it's the weather's like here, right? So there's a lot of humidity in the
right.
air. But
can't see it far.
Yeah, but I've been. Yeah,
you know Malaysia. The reason I ask is Malaysia's famous for. Unfortunately, they're kind of infamous. They got that flight. Remember
yes.
the flight that
yes.
went missing, and we still have never found it, which
exactly.
is the craziest story ever.
Yeah, yeah,
so.
That was before I arrived there. But
yeah, that was like 2012, I think, or something.
And,
yeah.
and as I said, you know, before we came on air, I was there when COVID set in, when COVID first arrived, and they had a really strict lockdown.
Yeah, what was theirs like? Because I thought this one here was strict. You know,
yeah.
you had to be, you know, jailed over there at Fatuainga. But what
yeah.
was it like in Malaysia?
You weren't allowed out of your house or apartment. Unless you were going to get takeout food, and police would stop you. There were police and army everywhere. And before that was defined, very clearly by the government. Of course, it was a Saturday. I went out for a ride on my bike, as I'm wont to do, and I was stopped at a military checkpoint, and they looked at me and said, "What do you think you're doing?" Right? I'm like, "I'm out for a bike ride." They're like, "There is a strict quarantine. You need to go back to your apartment right now, or we're going to take you away." And then they asked me, "Why?"
Remember that movie where the guy is smuggling weed out of Turkey? I think it's called Turkish Express or something. He gets locked in
Midnight Express.
Dude, that's
yeah.
Is that going through your mind when you're getting pulled over by the military?
The last thing I wanted was to be in a Malaysian prison, right?
Yeah.
So I'm like, "Nope, sir, I got it. I'm on my way home right now." Yeah.
You remember, the other thing I remember, this is like 1990s or something. This is in Singapore, though. That kid, I think his name was Michael K, and he got caught vandalizing cars, and they publicly caned
him. Yes.
Okay, you do remember that.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you throw a cigarette butt down or even chewing gum down, like the fines for littering there, I think also.
This is Malaysia.
This is Singapore.
Okay.
Are connected to caning. Public caning is still a thing.
I bet. Yeah. I bet their streets are clean, though.
They are indeed. It's a very, very clean city state, essentially. Yeah.
City state. Yeah.
Yeah. It's quite beautiful there, though.
Yeah, I've heard. So well, that's got to be a cool experience. And then you know you go to here, and you know people are just like, "Yeah, bongo rapper." You know, just I'm sure you see that when you're riding your bike.
Yes. Yeah. That's been, like, I guess, one of the more frustrating aspects, because the environment here is stunning. I mean, so many of the pieces try to capture the natural beauty here. Uh-huh. And as you heard in the last piece that I read, also, you know, some of the current concern about rising sea levels and about coral bleaching and things like that. I know the island has a lot of challenges, but I think the people are quite resilient, and the nature is beautiful and has been so inspiring. So I'm so grateful. It's a very bittersweet experience to be leaving. Shout out to my students who've been great, you know, all of these 6 years. I'll miss them more than, you know, than they can even imagine.
Man, Caroline Twill Singer hit the lottery when she found you. I you know.
It was just like I said, it was a Google search. Where haven't I lived in the world? South Pacific, English teaching, and the job popped up at PHS. And Caroline had also been a Peace Corps volunteer in Southern Africa.
Okay.
And I think that was an initial connection. And she's like, "Okay, Peace Corps volunteers, they know how to live simply. They know how to live where there's not, you know, a lot of distraction and so forth." And I think a week after our first contact, I had the contract in hand and was ready to come. And then, of course, the lockdown happened. And so online for a year before I could actually.
Two questions from our listeners here.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So these are all your poems, though. You didn't have any, these, none of your kids or anything like that, right?
Correct. These are all my poems. Okay. That's right.
And another one is, any thoughts on Ernest Hemingway? Papa Hemingway, they called them.
Papa Hemingway. Yeah, he was an early favorite. We read a good bit of Hemingway when I was in grad school. I like his style. I like his, you know, simple language, terse sentences, but still, you know, very, very powerful. I think my style is more, it's different, of course, but I like that style. So, yeah, I know everyone has a love-hate relationship with Hemingway. I don't teach him here, but I did teach him at the school in Pennsylvania.
Would you teach him again?
Oh, yeah, sure. Especially his short stories.
Okay.
Yeah, his short stories are amazing.
That would be, was Old Man of the Sea a short story? Or
that's, it's a novella. It's a long short story or a short novel, however you want to.
It's not like Farewell to Arms, which is like, geez, you know, that's a whole year.
Right. Yeah.
All right. Cool. Yeah,
that was a good one as well.
Good deal. All right. Well, Matt Caretti, looking forward to checking out your book, Slow Boat to Samoa. You can find it at the Fletcher Barstow Public Library, along with your two other books. And when is your, you said the 20th of this month is?
The 25th. So 25th. Saturday, the 25th at 11 a.m. There'll be an introduction, of course, a reading. I'll talk a little bit more about the form. I'll read a couple pieces, Q&A. And then some books will be for sale with a book signing, some snacks from Vila's.
Hey,
and, yeah.
Can't go wrong with
shout
that.
Shout out to Vila's for that. And if the people are interested, I'm always happy to meet with student groups or for coffee with just others who are interested in asking questions after they've read the collection.
Learn how to write a book. I mean, this is a great way to meet an audience. You know, if you like books or, you know, you like the written arts, literary arts, this is.
And I've been in touch with Ruta at ASCC because she's heads up the English Honor Society there, and I've invited them and said I'd be happy to do workshops. So yeah, really happy to talk more about the forum.
Okay, how do we get a hold of you?
People through PHS. My email is on their website, or My number here, should I share that?
Sure.
Sure. As 256-3061.
All right. Great opportunities. Just embrace, a published author, that's only with us for another six months before you, head out to your next assignment. All right. Matthew Coretti, looking forward to checking it out. Slow Boat to Samoa. Look for it at the library. And thanks to Justin over there for supporting our writers and the literary arts. Appreciate it. All right. Take care, Matt. Okay. Good to meet you.
Thank you.
Back after this.